The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Oh, we have so much to get to today. Some of the stuff that Inslee said at his announcement this morning is about as hilarious as a politician like him gets. Because he's not that inherently funny. But we'll point out a few things that are just absolutely ridiculous in Inslee's announcement. And then, you know, Ursula, I'm a fairly affable guy off the air.
Oh, yes.
I don't start anything.
Never.
Off the air?
No.
I never start anything.
Honestly, you are one of the mildest people I know off the air.
But here's the deal.
Somebody, I blame this on you, actually, Ursula.
What? If somebody starts, well, that's Nicole's bizarre interpretation.
It's coming.
If somebody starts something with me,
oh,
I'm going to finish it.
Oh.
And even though I'm meek and mild off the air, I can be fiery and tempestuous.
Oh, yeah.
On the air. And Nicole's partly right. You're the one who forwarded this tweet to me.
Oh.
So
I thought about just ignoring it.
If so did I. And I did for 3 days. And then I'm in the shower this morning. And I thought, no, you know what? I'm like Israel. You hit me, I'm going to hit you 100 times harder in return. So if somebody in the media wants to take a little, if they want to flick me in the shoulder, I'll punch them in the nose. So we'll do that probably at 12:30 this hour. You might not want to be in here for that. Just warning you.
Just to be clear, though, it's not against me. It's just that I pointed out, hey, did you see this?
And you just shared something with me.
As soon as I texted that, I thought, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to start something? I'll finish it. I don't start things. I'm pretty good about that. So, 12:30 this afternoon. We're going to have some fun here on The Big Show. What'd you just say off mic?
I just said, oh. I don't like to be a troublemaker.
I can't even hear that through my headphones with your mic off. No, it's not your fault. No, it's not you. I just, it's just my nature. So we'll do that at 12:30 this afternoon. And I want to mention right at the beginning, because we broke this news at 1 o'clock yesterday. And we mentioned it again at 2 o'clock. And I know that there's some people who just listen in the noon hour to The Big Show, but we did make an announcement yesterday that we're going to do our first ever live show for a live audience that I hope includes you. But tickets are going really fast. It's been really sweet and really cool how fast the tickets are going, but it's kind of a little one-man show that I've put together. It's going to be Friday night, April 12th. It's kind of the story of how Seattle used to be a lumberjack and fisherman and independent city. And I had a life of total dependency at the time. And then Seattle did a 180 and I did a 180. And you can mark almost the exact same year when both started to flip. So we've got a little show we've put together. It's going to be April 12th, the Kirkland Performance Center. And if you want to get tickets, you got to hurry because they are going really fast. Go to mynorthwest.com/events. MyNorthwest.com/events. We would love to have you there. And now, with that as mere prelude, let's get to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
So Jay Inslee shocked the world this morning by announcing that he's running for President of the United States. And boy, I got so much audio. I just loved his opening words when he made his announcement today.
Good morning. Good morning. It really is a good morning. We have the sun raining down on us.
Does the sun rain down? I'm not much of a wordsmith. The sun shines down. The sun beams down. The rain rains down, Mr. Governor. That was just a great start. I'm sure that was ad-libbed because they didn't know if it was going to be sunny or cloudy when they went out there. So he ad-libs, the sun is raining down on us. And then I thought this was shocking.
I just typed in that into Google, though. There's a song called The Sun Rains Down.
Yeah, the song's stupid, too. And then this. Remember the story we had a couple days ago that Dr. Seuss is now racist? Did you hear that story that we had?
I did hear it.
Yeah, that they...
Silly.
Because there are some illustrations in his books, one that has an Asian character, and they just have a couple of lines, slanted lines for eyes. Even though Dr. Seuss didn't do the illustrations, there's another book that has a couple of people at a zoo who are described as being from Africa, and they're just shirtless, wearing a grass skirt. And so there's a big thing this week that Dr. Seuss is racist. So I couldn't believe that the governor who wants to be president embraces such rampant racism as Dr. Seuss.
But I have to tell you that my grandkids can't be here today, and they told me it's because today is Dr. Seuss Day at Wilkes Elementary. We Inslees.
By the way, when I do my live show, I hope I can get laughs that easy. They told me it's Dr. Seuss Day. What an audience he has. That's what I need when I, April 12th.
Or were they laughing uncomfortably because he admits that even his grandkids weren't interested?
Maybe that's it. Just the reaction.
Today. And they told me it's because today is Dr. Seuss Day at Wilkes Elementary. We Inslees know how to prioritize.
What? Since when? Did you know how to prioritize? You've been the steward of the biggest tax increases in the history of the state of Washington. The Inslees know how to prioritize?
Well, I think he's saying that sarcastically, which makes it even worse. He's saying he doesn't know how to prioritize.
Woo! Well, he's right about that. But then, the big moment.
And now it is time for our nation to set a new priority. So I am announcing today...
What? What are you going to announce?
But I'm a candidate to become the next president of the United States.
I bet not more than 3% of the people cheering will vote for him in the primaries. They can't. They won't. So then it's all climate change. He is going to be the climate change candidate. That's all he cares about. Climate change, everything. And so he talked about the urgency.
We have a very short period of time to act. And whether we shrink from this challenge or rise to it is the vital question of our time. And we know it is the 11th hour. But as we have shown time and time again throughout our nation's history, this is our nation's hour to shine. And I believe we will. Because of the urgency of the moment, the scope of the challenge, because the economic growth opportunities inherent in clean energy are clear, and because no other issue touches so much of what we as a nation care most deeply about. And I am confident that we can do it.
Is that why you're getting 0% in the early Democratic polling? You've been on MSNBC, CNN, CBS. You've been talking to a national audience every opportunity you get for weeks, saying that climate change is everything, and you're getting 0% in the polling that came out yesterday morning. So you're telling me that the nation's going to elect you president based on this? And If you try spreading this lie to the nation, I'll get the word out what a lie it is.
Because of the massive fires here last summer, our kids were told they had to stay indoors because the air was so unhealthy. Think about this. The air quality in Washington State was the worst in the world last year. Not Beijing, not New Delhi, but here in Washington State.
And why is that, Mr. Governor? Why are you spreading that lie? It was wildfires in British Columbia. There were winds from the north that brought the British Columbia smoke down into Washington. British Columbia, which has a carbon tax that you've been pushing here in Washington, saying that it would start to solve our problems. And yet British Columbia for years has had a carbon tax. And you know what? Their forests still caught on fire. And their smoke still was able to cross the border. Now, maybe what we need, maybe Jay Inslee will do this as president. If you'll build a wall that is 1,000 miles high, that wouldn't even have to be 1,000 miles. What would it have to be? Let's go up to 40,000 feet, 8 miles. If you will build a wall 8 miles high between Canada and the United States so that none of the British Columbia smoke will ever cross the border, and that may mean that we will separate some smoke particle families at the border. But if you'll build an 8 mile tall border wall between the U.S. and Canada, and for good measure, build one 8 miles tall on the U.S.-Mexico border to keep the illegals out, too. If you'll do that, I'll vote for you. But when you talk about how we had the worst air in the world because of British Columbia fires, but he is a climate expert, you know.
I co-authored a book 12 years ago. It was called Apollo's Fire, Igniting America's Clean Energy Economy. And in that book, we laid out a vision of economic growth around clean energy.
Okay, let me tell you something about that book. We have right now about 5 times more people listening to the radio show at this moment than have purchased Jay Inslee's book in the last 12 years. Nobody cares about his book. But, again, if people don't look at the stats, then he can claim that because I'm a published author on this subject. And then there's this. Now, let's see if anybody else in the media gives you this stat here. Because Jay Inslee talked about how green jobs are the fastest growing in America. Check this out.
Jobs in the clean energy economy are growing twice as fast as the rest of the economy. The fastest growing job in the nation is a solar installer. Number two.
Yeah.
Number two, wind turbine technician.
Woo! Woo! Ow! Okay, so the two fastest growing jobs in the world, or in the country, solar installer and wind turbine technician. Okay, so let's go to the stats here from BLS.gov. Let's see what the, let's check out the 5 fastest growing jobs in America. Number 5, physician assistant. There were, let's see, they right now there are 106,000 physician assistants. And they say they will add 40,000 in the next 10 years. So they're going to go from 106,000 to 146,000. Okay. That's pretty good. Home health aides. Right now they have 2.9 million. They're going to add 1.2 million to that in the next 10 years. That's, wow. They're going to have 4 million people working in that field. Let's see. Let's go to the two that Inslee cited. Wind turbine technician. Right now, there are 5,800. And they're going to add 5,600. So they'll have about 11,000 people doing that job. Now, again, compare that to the fifth and fourth. 146,000. 4.1 million. And then the one he cites, wind turbine, they're going to go from 5,800 to 11,000. Well, that's nothing. It, percentage-wise, because most in the media are really dopey when it comes to math and numbers and putting things in perspective, percentage-wise, yeah. But when you start with an almost non-existent base, then it's easy to be the fastest growing. It can't sustain that. And still an insignificant number of jobs. There are more people working in, many more people working in one downtown Seattle building than the total jobs in that industry. And then the number one job, solar installer. They have 11,300. They're going to add 11,800. So they'll have 23,000 of them. So on a percentage basis, is it the fastest growing? Yeah, because it's starting from an almost non-existent base. And so he throws out these stats that are technically correct, but is anybody in the media going to talk about, yeah, but it's still an insignificant number, and that's over the next 10 years that they're going to add those jobs. So we're going to go from 11,000 to 22,000 over the next 10 years. They're going to add 1,100 jobs per year. And you're citing that as the next economic driver of the United States of America? That is about the phoniest stat you will ever, ever hear. But nobody's going to call him out on it because nobody checks numbers. But he's just pitching this lie back and forth.
So climate change is not more important than the economy. It is the economy. This is...
Okay, and then, here's how he's made Washington State better.
Here in Washington, we've invested in companies that are building our renewable future. We are electrifying our transportation system. We're growing clean energy jobs by the bushelful.
How many jobs in a bushel? Would you Google that, Nicole? How many jobs in a bushel? See what comes up. I'm guessing. How big's a bushel? I'm a city boy. I don't even know how big a bushel is.
Let's see. Typically holds about 125 medium apples.
Okay, so I'm guessing that I'm about the size. I'm about the size of 100 apples. So they're growing jobs one at a time, by the bushelful.
I believe he means 125 at a time.
No, people aren't apple sized. If you can get 125 apples in a bushel, you can get one person. So once again, we're checking the numbers here, unlike everybody else in the media. He's growing one job at a time? We need millions of jobs in America, Mr. Governor.
Here in Washington, we've invested in companies that are building our renewable future. We are electrifying our transportation system.
Mm-hmm.
We're growing clean energy jobs by the bushelful.
One at a time.
And economic innovation and leadership for the future, we know, starts in our schools.
Okay. Did you talk about the gridlock in Washington? Did you talk about how we have more illegals per capita than any state? Did you talk about the heroin problem? Did you talk about the homelessness problem? Did you talk about the gridlock? Did you talk about how the Cato Institute rated you 50th out of 50 governors when it comes to taxation and spending? Dead last in the United States, because all that's going to come out in the campaign. You can talk about adding a bushel of jobs at a time through green energy, but at some point you're going to have to answer for the gridlock, the drugs, the skyrocketing taxes, and the lack of effectiveness of state government. If he can bring that to America, he's got my vote. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, Nicole begged me not to do this, but if somebody in the media wants to start something with me, I'll gladly finish it. Coming up next. So I have a talk show, and it's my job on the talk show to give my opinion on stuff. And a few days ago, I was talking about the upzoning in Seattle, and it makes me very sad. I think it's going to destroy, you know, part of what's left of the character of our city. Because when I was a kid growing up here, you know, people had homes and yards, and kids played in the yard. And the mania now is they want to upzone 21 more neighborhoods around Seattle, tear down single-family housing, put in apartments. And I mentioned when the upzoning issue came to be voted on by the Seattle Council a few days ago, I said, it makes me sad. And I hearkened back to about, I don't remember if it was 2 or 4 years ago, but my wife and I were in France and we were in this coastal city and we were walking around. She said, what's wrong? I said, this makes me sad looking at these cities here where there's no single family homes, no yards. If you want to be outside, you got to go to some public square with a bunch of stinky people. And I go, it just makes me sad because I know this is the dream and the vision for Seattle. And I told my wife that. And I also, in the course of all of that, I don't talk in depth about deep conspiracy theories, but I know that there are a lot of very active conspiracy, one of which I'll explain to you in a few more minutes here. But there's a thing called UN Agenda 21. And I mentioned that in the course of why it makes me sad, because I know that the vision that the Marxists have for Seattle is consistent with that. And that is to get rid of private property, to get rid of single family homes, to get rid of, certainly in Seattle, yards and all of that. So I talked about all of that in the course of the show. So then that night, Ursula the Agitator forwards me a tweet from a Seattle Times reporter, their politics reporter named Jim Brunner. And he tweeted, "Dory Monson once took a cruise and got off and looked at a French port city, and so Seattle up zones mean the end of private property because Agenda 21. And he linked to the My Northwest story. So just a snide little shot at me. Now, it's always struck me as odd when so-called journalists, when they take shots at talk show hosts, because it's my job to give my opinion on stuff and to view the world through the prism of my life, my experiences. And one of the reasons our show is successful is I can take what's happening in Seattle and what the vision of the Marxists for our city is, and I can compare that to, you know, what I told my wife in a French city a few years ago. And it's just, it's the way I tell stories. So it struck me as odd that a journalist would tell an opinion person or just make a snide comment about it. It'd be like me coming on the show and criticizing Danny Westneat every day, which I don't do. I disagree with him a lot, but big deal. He's a columnist. It's his job to give his opinion. I don't come on here and rip him when I disagree with him. He's doing his job. But at the Times, they're so-called journalists. In this case, I'll tell you what I said back to this guy. I said back to Jim Brunner at the Seattle Times, because, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I take the Israeli approach. You hit me, I'll hit you 100 times harder. Because I don't start things like this, but I will gladly finish them. So I tweeted back at him this morning. And by the way, Nicole didn't want me to talk about this. And she goes, "What?" He tweeted this a couple days ago. And I said, "I know, and I was going to leave it alone. But I was in the shower this morning, and I started to steam on this a little bit."
I feel like this is something that might get said in the White House often. You just have an idea in the shower, and you just tweet it out.
Absolutely.
And you're like, dang it. And then all the people around you are like, oh.
That's why I'm going to be the next president of the United States.
Wait till you get to work. I'm going to back all this up.
So I went on Twitter, and I said back to Jim Brunner at the Seattle Times, "How did you cover the Murray Cantwell infanticide vote this week?" "Oh, you didn't. I'm a talk host paid to give opinions. You're a fake journalist who spikes stories if they would hurt your favored politicians." And I talked about that rather in depth many days ago, that Murray and Cantwell look horrible. Because they get bought off. By the way, the 42 people who voted for infanticide, I know a lot of people hate that term, but they got about $500,000 from Planned Parenthood, which was adamantly opposed to this bill. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time because I know everybody's sick of me talking about that bill, but I'll just tell you quickly that it had nothing to do with a woman's health. It had nothing to do with abortion. That bill was about one thing and one thing only. A baby is born alive. Should the doctors make an effort to save that baby? And I found a couple of nurses who testified before the House Judiciary Committee a few years ago, Jill Stanek and Allison Baker. And the stories they told were horrifying about one in particular, a 22-week-old baby that they meant to abort. And according to Ms. Lowe, she saw the baby girl in a specimen dish. She was stunned when she saw the girl gasping for air. They told her to dispose of it. She said, "I don't think I can do that. The baby is alive." She asked for permission to hold the baby until she died. She wrapped the child she dubbed Baby Hope in a blanket and sang to her. Breathing room air without any other supports, Baby Hope lived for 3 hours and was left to die. Now, maybe you think that's okay. Maybe Jim Brunner at the Seattle Times thinks that that's okay. My whole point was, at least it's a news story that Murray and Cantwell voted against saving these babies' lives, saying, oh, it never happens. Well, there's people who have testified before the U.S. House who have told their experiences of seeing how it happens and that they let these babies die after they're born. Nothing to do with abortion, nothing to do with a woman's health. Has to do with a baby laying on a table. Do we leave it to die, or do we require that we try to save its life? So anyway, Jim Brunner at the Seattle Times, he's our politics reporter. They don't even cover the story of how Murray and Cantwell voted. Why? Well, because they'd probably have to cover, no, they probably wouldn't. They'd ignore the fact that Planned Parenthood was adamantly against this bill, and Planned Parenthood gave $500,000 to all the people who voted against the bill, collectively, including Murray and Cantwell. They were part of the recipients. And there's no way to make a case that this makes Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell look good. So what does the Seattle Times do? They spike the story. They don't even cover it. Their politics reporter doesn't cover a vote by the senators from Washington State of a matter, literally, of life and death. Nothing could be more important. And the Times spikes it. Now, I don't think anybody praises the Seattle Times, certainly in talk radio, to the extent that I do. Every time they do something great, and there's a lot of great stuff, I say it. But if they're a political reporter who ignores stories because he has decided, and here's the problem. Let me take a quick time out. Now that I'm getting fired up, I was only going to go one segment on this. But I got a lot more to say about this because it has to do with the media here locally. I'll keep rolling. Now, you want to start something, Jim? Okay, I'll keep finishing it next. Love to hear what you think about all of this. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. So, I'm responding. And yes, I do respond with great multiples if somebody decides to, out of the blue, pick something with me. So anyway, Jim Brunner, Seattle Times political guy, decides not to cover the Patty Murray, Maria Cantwell infanticide vote because it would look bad for the politicians the Seattle Times loves, Cantwell and Murray. And I want to talk about the bigger issue here because, you know, a few weeks ago, my colleague Todd Herman, he broke a story about how at Q13 an editor had edited a Trump video. And the editor got fired, and it doesn't reflect poorly on Q13. But the Seattle Times picked up the story that Todd, his show broke. He was on the other station at the time. And the Seattle Times first didn't give attribution. We called them out on Twitter. Then they give attribution not to Todd or his show or his radio station because they hate, you know, they just can't hate it, or they can't stand anything that isn't left-wing. And so they gave credit to our website, which is fine, My Northwest. But here's the way I look at it. The Seattle Times is driven ideologically instead of to deliver the biggest audience possible. And that's why, you know, newspapers as a model are really struggling. But the TV stations, TV news is thriving. And I look at everybody who does great work in town. We're news partners with Channel 7. And I think Cairo TV does a fantastic job. And their reporters, Amy Clancy and Lindsay Sheldon and Gary Horker and, you know, many others, they come on with me all the time. But I'm not exclusive, or they're not exclusive to me, because I will reach out to anybody who I think does great work. In fact, in the Fast 15, Q13 had a great story last night about these purse snatchers in Snohomish County. And I'm going to spotlight that. I'm going to give Q13 attribution. And Matt Markovich at Como was on my show earlier this week because he had a story about how Seattle was trying to sneak these safe lots past people. And Chris Ingles at King 5 I've had on many times when he had that blockbuster story about the Olympia power couple that was ripping off the low-income housing industry around here. An Inslee staffer and the chief of the house. I'll have anybody on. And by the way, they'll all come on with me because my attitude towards all this and towards I'm just going to bring you the best stories, regardless of who breaks it. And I'm very proud. I'm confident that this show, my show, I'm confident we break more news stories than any radio talk show in the country. I'm very confident of that. So we have our fair share, but I'll give attribution. I'll have anybody on from anywhere. Because, and that's the thing about TV news. I think we're very well served by the four stations that do news in town. You know why? Because they're competitive. They got to beat each other. And so how do you do that? Well, you got to have stories that the audience wants. Why do I have the biggest audience in radio? Because I talk about stuff people want to hear. And I won't spike things because, you know, like the Murray Cantwell thing. I won't spike things. I've been trying to get Democrats on all week to talk about making illegals a protected class and the sex ed K through 12 bill. I try to get on the other side all the time. But the TV stations, they're breaking stories and they're finding stories people care about and that are relevant to the life. Here's the difference. The Seattle Times has a monopoly. They're not driven by competition. And competition breeds excellence. And so they still can say, Murray and Cantwell, they voted for infanticide this week. I mean, everyone in the country is talking about the Virginia governor, what he said about it, and the bill in New York and Rhode Island. It's like one of the most discussed topics in the country. No, that would hurt Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell. And so they're driven by far-left journalists, or as I called this guy in my tweet this morning, a fake journalist. Because if you spike stories, I can pick and choose because the show's about my opinion. I will defend that we do a better job breaking news than any radio show. But journalists are not supposed to pick and choose based on their ideology. But they sit around there and they have a, you know, ownership and an editorial board that is very far left. And the reporters are very far left. And so instead of going out and covering news, they sit and send out snide little tweets about me and my opinion on things. Go ahead. Keep doing it. But you hit me, I'll hit you 100 times harder. Fast 15's next.